The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.
Unfiltered opinions.
Sometimes you have ideas and you're not quite sure why.
As you secure the bag.
Sometimes you meet people and realize there's probably a reason why you stayed in touch.
Just listen.
Sometimes all the pieces just come together by themselves.
Woo! I'm Jimmy Moyana.
And I'm Simon Brown.
Welcome to Insider Exchange.
Good morning. Welcome to another episode of Insider Exchange, brought to you live every Monday and with following episodes later in the week. In Market Matters this week, we are going to be taking a look at the upcoming Monetary Policy Committee rates decision that is going to be coming out of the MPC, or the Reserve Bank rather, in South Africa. We're also going to be taking a look at our budget reflections from last week's budget speech that finally made it. Well, we don't yet know if it's made it over the line because it still needs to be voted on. But the third budget speech has taken place. We're going to be reflecting on that. We're also going to be taking a look at PCE data, personal consumption expenditure data out of the US, as that is their preferred measure of inflation. And sticking with the US, Fed Chair Jerome Powell spoke last night. We're going to be taking a look at that and seeing what he had to say. That's a lot to get through from a market's perspective, and the week has only just begun. I mean, markets have opened today, markets opening in bullish territory. Well, especially if you're a Sasol shareholder, it's nice to get a 4 billion rand settlement every now and then. Share price moves up quite nicely.
Yeah, I mean, the challenge, of course, is that nice for Sasol shareholders, not so nice for Transnet, although they just got 51 billion from government. So hey.
Yeah, so I was going to say, Transnet's not really got too much of a problem here. They're just going to pass the bill on to someone else.
You and I.
Yes.
And of course, the last time the government had to pay over was Comair, and that didn't work. But that was a different story. Mm. And our top 40 all-time highs, that's quite sweet.
Yeah. It's a good start to the week.
Okay, we've come back a little. We were at all-time highs 20 minutes ago.
And the Rand was at 1780 at some point between Friday and today, 1780. Now, granted, today at the moment, we're where are we now? We
86.
Would be 86. Okay,
86 and a half.
Yeah, but still, 1780 after last week's meeting at the White House.
After all of last week, inflation, budgets,
everything. We got down to 1780.
And the Rand's like, meh. Gold, Friday close, all-time closing, weekly closing high.
Good. Markets are just having a good time at them. Well, certain markets. dollar index is back at 98 points, which is kind of the low it's been at. It's that April low that we saw. But from a bigger picture perspective, if we kind of break that April low of 97.50 and we head towards, say, 95, we wouldn't have been there since December 2021. So still not a lot of confidence in the dollar at the moment, but that's an update on markets at the moment. I want to look at budget because that was
a lot of palaver for not very much.
Did we need three attempts? I don't think we needed to go through this three times to arrive at such a mediocre outcome.
Correct. The problem is that in budget one, it got presented. Like, this is what we're doing, 2% VAT. There was no negotiation and stuff. And I think this is the ANC learning how a government of national unity works. When you are a 40% party,
you are no longer a majority.
Yeah. In the olden days, you put out a budget and all your cadres voted for it and everything was fine. suddenly they're learning, no, this is not how it rolls. And in fact, the minister has said ahead of the budget, he said that, because the budget process starts at around the October with MTBPS.
Yes.
And it's a sense of, well, maybe we should start including people from then. It's like, yeah, maybe.
Considering you won the election in May, so you knew going into last year's MTBPS that you wouldn't have the majority coming into this year's February budget. Yeah. You could have started it in October of last year.
Yeah. Interesting. So Tony Leon's got a biography out. And there was an excerpt somewhere I read. And he talks around the whole process of building that GNU last year. Mm. And if you remember, Floyd Shibangu called for a toilet break. And that's when they signed it. No toilet break. No small bladders win the world. but he was saying, you know what? It was a disaster, which is what he's, in other words, if the ANC went left with MK and EFF versus a deeply inferior, you know, deeply flawed sort of document and status. But we kind of are learning, although we shouldn't be. I mean, there were coalitions in the Western Cape and Cape Town 20 years ago. Mm. But it is kind of getting that sense of how it all works. And to the point, a whole lot of 3 months of trauma. And what we also now understand is that it's still good. So we always thought that the budget, oh no, that the speech is just, it's like actually now it's got to go into committee and then it's got to get voted on. We learned a whole lot.
Mm. It has been. It has been a very learning kind of 6 months.
I'd rather be ignorant.
Speaking of things that we have learned, side quests quickly while we have this. We are learning that it takes a lot more than a couple of mentions to get someone to get your attention. But we are also learning that you can pretty much put anything on a cup, really, if you wanted to. But this is, of course, in line with what is happening this week. Insider Exchange will be at the Finance Magnates Africa Summit in Cape Town. We spoke about that last week. And we'll remind you again at the end of the show that if you are in Cape Town, we'd love to see you there. Back to what we are looking at. So budget, anticlimactic, but that now means between budget and inflation, this week we've got Monetary Policy Committee. MPC meets on Tuesday, get a decision on Thursday. Inflation came in at what, 2.8 versus 2.7?
Inflation is – so the idea is the Deputy Minister of Finance is – now, was it Deputy Minister? Someone was floating the –
David Masondo.
Yeah.
That's Deputy Minister.
Okay. And he floated the idea of you know, redoing the inflation targeting. It should be 3%, et cetera, et cetera. We're below the target we're not even at yet.
Ooh, much, much, much to the joy of our central bank governor, Malumele Sechanyako, because he's been speaking about this as well, saying that it's better to anchor inflation at that lower point. It makes us more competitive globally, blah, 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 blah. Now, that's good and well in theory to do. And I actually think it might be somewhat easier to maintain and to get right given the current situations, right, in the country. But let's go down like a dream path. just dream with me for a moment here. South Africa achieves economic growth.
I know this friend.
But you haven't seen this friend in how many years? 20. Mm. Right? So South Africa somehow gets into a state where the economy starts to move the way it should or the way it is capable of moving.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens after you've revised your inflation targeting down and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Initially, the short-term reaction from an inflationary perspective, of course, is demand-side inflation is going to return. And you will see that push inflation back up. Mm-hmm. That doesn't necessarily mean that the central bank would then need to hike rates, right? Because a growing economy is a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
At the point where we are now, and let's say we reduce inflation anchoring down to 3%. We're at 2.8%. Does that still not warrant a rate cut?
Yeah.
I mean, Thursday.
Thursday.
Yeah.
Thursday.
Just now.
And to be clear, our current target, as the minister always reminds us, is 4.5. He's not interested in this range thing. And truthfully, he stuck onto that when it was like close to 6. Mm. It's like, anyway. And now his challenge is to, I mean, 0.5%. Come on. Anything less than 0.5% is just murderous.
Do you think we could get that? Because I'm looking at you and I'm thinking that is an ambitious number. I thought maybe 25 basis points.
It's probably going to be 25. It's almost certainly going to be 25, right? Because
let's look at the rationale behind it. inflation is down. The rand is stable. So you are maintaining the rand stability at 1780. Mm-hmm. Fuel inflation is moderating because the crude oil price, realistically, no matter what the Central Energy Fund wants to tell us, hasn't gone sustainably above $70 for quite some time. So if mm-hmm. they use these average prices and all of that, and perhaps we'll look at that at one point as to how they actually calculate it, if we can find the data. But fuel inflation is under control. Food inflation is under control. Electricity inflation is never under control because of nurses' tariff hikes. So let's just give up on that.
Yeah. No, and that's not going
to
happen.
Just leave that one, right? But all of the other factors point to the fact that we can actually get a rate cut. And we've seen other economies do rate cuts. Granted, some economies like the United States haven't. And again, our central bank governor also says he doesn't base his decisions on what is happening in the United States.
But he's also then, so he doesn't. But if the rate differential becomes too much, it could potentially weaken our currency. They are also worried about the rand and what could happen to the rand.
But Donald Trump can weaken our currency. You don't need a rate differential to do that for you.
He's good for our currency.
Turns out he's great at the moment.
We're at 1780.
Yeah.
Well, actually, so as who was it who on Friday, the Treasury Secretary said, no, it's not the dollar's weak, it's all the other currencies are going up. And then somebody, Ricus Riordis, says, yeah, my boat isn't sinking, the ocean's just rising. Whatevs. I mean, they're weakening their currency. And there's an argument that says Trump likes a weaker dollar because it makes them more competitive.
But it also, as we have outlined in one of our previous episodes, means you can refinance your debt at a lower rate. It looks better from that perspective. So maybe this is the tactic from a refinancing perspective. We know that the US recently passed a bill around their debt management and those sorts of things. I didn't quite read that, but if I'm not wrong, it was something to do with effectively just continuing to increase the debt ceiling if they need to.
As and when needed.
Okay, cool. So I didn't miss anything there.
Yeah. But I mean, so the 10-year is now sticky above 4.5. The 30-year is sticky above 5, as is the 20. I mean, even if you get down to the 3-year, that's 3.968 is the lowest. I mean, they're in a heap of pain. We know what the answer is. More income, which is tax, or less spending. And, neither are happening.
And add to that, the president of the United States wants to reduce certain taxes for certain individuals. So he wanted to afford tax cuts. I'm not sure if it's to corporates or to wealthy individuals. So he's been wanting to do that for the longest time anyway. Perhaps he's just planning ahead for post-government life and which tax bracket he'll be taxed in there. But that's it's a smart way to do it, right? If I know which tax bracket I'm going to end up in and I have the ability to change how much tax I'm going to pay at that point.
Except his money is now all in crypto, and which is like completely, well, it's not anonymous, but and you can't.
What, Trump coin?
Yeah.
The thing is there, I don't know how much of his money is in crypto, because to set up a coin, and we said we'd do this just as an exercise, and perhaps we'll do it as a social experiment, to set up a meme coin or a coin of your own, you don't really need a lot of capital investment.
Oh, you
per
don't
se.
Need, no, Trent, there's a website out there. I went and had a look-see. The hard part was a logo. And then I remembered ChatGPT and DALL-E 3, and I'm like, oh, that's not hard either.
That's not hard either, yeah.
So you can set up anything. And what they do is, so because they're junk meme coins, they don't trade on real exchanges. So this platform then trades them for you and they take a slice of the trading action. So that's where all your pump and dumps come from. What do they call them?
Rug pools.
Rug pools, because these people are classy. They don't pump and dump, they rug pool. But then, I mean, Saudi, who's giving him a jet? Qatar.
No, Simon. Qatar's giving a jet to the Pentagon, not to President Trump.
Well,
he just so happens to keep it after he leaves office.
Well, and then it goes to his library. The man's never been to a library in his life. But the bigger point is that if they're giving him a jet, which I read a story, which is surely a conspiracy theory, but apparently the jet's been parked somewhere for ages and actually costing them money. And this is just like getting rid of an expense. But then surely they could also slip him a couple of $100 million dirhams, whatever their currency is at the same time, into an unnamed dirham account somewhere in
No, they've given him $4 billion worth of land to build a golf course on.
There we go.
Different way of moving around
different
money.
Different way of doing
it. But yes, no, it's not a tender, folks. It's not a tender. let's take a look at Jerome Powell while we have time. He spoke last night.
Yeah.
We expect President of the ECB, Christine Lagarde, to speak as well. And, of course, we touched on our own central bank speaking. Markets, obviously, with Jerome speaking last night and going into this week, PCE data coming out at the end of the week, from a US perspective, they would want to see what's happening there. And that then affects how they are looking at things. And Jerome Powell has said it before. He wants to see the impact of these tariffs on the US economy before making a rates decision.
Yeah, and exactly. I mean, he needs to see something. The expected for PCE this week is that it moves higher, which delays rate cuts from him. He also went quite aggressive on his response to the pandemic, taking rates to zero. He's like, that was the right response. And he also went quite aggressive on independence of central banks, because, of course, Trump called him a fool or something. I forget the language.
wasn't so, nice words.
Yeah, so he pushed back hard. But, you know, at Jerome Powell's in there until middle of next year. There are ways Trump could fire him, but it would end up in court and he would probably lose. So he's got another year and he's going to do it the right way, which is wait for the evidence to tell him, to show him that it's time to cut rates some more.
Not evidence of the DRC, not South Africa, and then empirical evidence.
Verified, empirical. The word that doesn't get into the Oval Office very often. Yeah. So he wants to see the real McCoy.
Yeah.
And then he will respond accordingly. And the truth of the matter is that, I mean, if you remember beginning of last year, 6 rate cuts coming. Well, we never got that last year. The thing with inflation is that it's easy to get down at first and then the last bit's hard. And we were in that last bit is hard part. And that's when central bankers get very careful and stuff and et cetera, et cetera. And then 20 January happened and now the threat to inflation is to the upside.
Mm-hmm.
And not pandemic levels, not necessarily 9%, but certainly away from that 2% target, which, to be clear, they're not at.
Mm. Those folks that have just joined us on our live stream, Jimbo's asked what our Starbucks names are. And this week, as we said, I am FMAS because the Finance Magnates Africa Summit is taking place at the end of the week or later in the week, and we will be there. And you can pretty much put anything on a cup. So Simon this week.
I'm Simone. So how did they get FMAS right and they can't get Simon right?
It was a social experiment to see how they could spell it. So, tell us your Simone story, because you've got a Simone story. So this name is not far out.
So I'm actually going to go way back to my high school when there were 3 Simon Browns in my year, which created all levels of complexity. It was a big school. In standard 6, what's that, grade 8, there were over 200 boys. By the time we got to matric, there were 150, and there were 3 Simon Browns. Anyway.
What are the odds? At the same school, at the same time in the school.
And we were totally different. Like there was the clever one, the stupid one, the middle one. Like we were totally different.
One were you?
I'm not commenting. And then we get, and then I join Standard Bank and they issue a press release. And there's this Simone Brown it's Simon Brown, but an E on the Simon and an E on the Brown. Simone Brown, they're so excited, has joined Standard Bank, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm like, this is going to be really awkward because there's a Simone Brown and now there's a Simon Brown. And I'm so glad. And it turned out it was a typo.
Did you not find it strange that the Simone Brown joined in the exact same department that you joined in at as well?
No.
Well, to be fair, no. After going through 3 Simon Browns in high school, this is a small world.
Yeah, yeah. So there's also a bit of backstory. My first day, I arrived 7 hours late for work because I'd been in Cape Town the day before. My flight had been cancelled. So I was never supposed to arrive on time, but I was even extra late. So I never went through the induction process and all of that. So I don't know who else was joining Standard Bank that day. I mean, like, I know nothing.
I just showed up here. I just work here. Yeah.
So I was the smart one at school.
Ah, there we go. We got the answer. The real Simon Brown. Yes. Thank goodness we got that, Simon. Folks, that is Market Matters. We're going to leave the show on that note. But what we are going to get into in our deep dive is we're going to be diving into car financing. Should you get a balloon payment on your vehicle? Or should you finance your car in alternative means? And those sorts of questions and conundrums. A spoiler alert. I'm going to share why I think you should get a balloon payment on your vehicle, but that's for the deep dive. That's coming up next. That's going to be out later in the week, so make sure not to miss that. Shout out to our TikTok community for joining us. As always, we love you guys. You guys keep us going as well. But that's Market Matters for this week. We're going to get into the deep dive. In our deep dive this week, we are diving into car financing and whether or not, amongst other questions, you should consider a balloon payment on your vehicle financing. Spoiler alert, my theory is get a balloon. Stick around and I'll tell you why. Si, this is going to be such a fun conversation because Simon Brown has, for those who don't know Simon as well as I do, owned his vehicle for the last 16 years. Have you paid it off?
No, so the vehicle's 16 years old. I got it in 2015 as secondhand.
Okay.
I smashed over 10 years. Yeah, I smashed my Honda, which I'd had for 10 years.
Okay.
And then bought this instead.
Bought this. All right.
Yeah. I paid cash for it. So my first car I bought, which cost 46,000 rand. I've never had a new car.
Okay.
I got a loan for. And then the second car, I got a smaller loan. And then the third car, I had almost no loan. And by the fourth car, I could pay cash for it.
Nice. Yeah. So car financing is, for some people, I mean, you hear all these things where people say, oh, no, this is a luxury. You don't need this. You can get around with public transport, blah, 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 blah. But for some people, it is a necessity. So some types of jobs require you to have a vehicle. It's put in the job description. In other cases, it could just be a circumstance situation where you work in a different city and therefore commuting via public transport doesn't necessarily make sense. So there are various reasons why people get vehicles, right?
Sure.
Now, financing the vehicle is a completely different story because depending on where you go and what conversations you have, people have said, oh, no, get a car financed without a balloon payment. Some people have said spread it over as long a period as time. I know someone that's recently, I don't know if it's recent, that's entered into a financial lease for a vehicle over a 9-year period.
Yeah, I've heard of 9. So 8 has been moderately.
I thought 6 was the maximum.
No. So the 9 years, 8 years.
Nine years.
Look, your car will last you 9 years. And cars these days, you've really got to do damage. And I mean, even if you're doing a chunk of mileage, well, I mean, if you're doing, 1,500 a month, that's 20,000, that's 200,000 in 9 years, that car will be fine.
Yeah, but 1,500 a month, Si, is people driving the way you drive. For some people, 1,000 kilometers can be done in a week.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, I didn't even do 1,000 kilometers in a month.
Right. But that's, again, because of your setup, where you need to go,
I walk to the studio.
Exactly.
The MoneyWeb studio, I think, is
2 minutes, four kilometers maybe?
5 minutes.
Right.
I think it's 2Ks. So the far trip is to go to BDTV. That takes me 10 minutes.
A whole 10, right?
A whole 10.
But I'm now thinking I've had to travel.
Yeah.
Some people can do 100 kilometers a day. And so halfway through the month, you've done that 1,500 allocation, right? So from a mileage perspective, that's one thing to look at. But you say that a car can last 10 years and all of that. Obviously, that requires maintenance and all those things.
Sure, sure.
What doesn't last 10 years in the modern day is the look of the car and whether or not you want an upgrade, right? Mm-hmm. And for me, that's a critical point when looking at the vehicle and looking at the vehicle financing. If you intend to keep the car for 10 years, then by all means, do whatever to pay it off and all of that sort of stuff. But if you get a vehicle, understanding that one day in the future, you may want to upgrade your vehicle, then that's a different kind of consideration. I wouldn't look at that as an investment case to say, let me take it without balloon, pay it off and all of that and all of that, and then I'll have a vehicle to trade in, because there are other ways to get around that, right? And that's just my personal perspective around what I've experienced as well. So you can take a balloon payment, you cannot take a balloon payment. But I guess if you have the option to do it, look at the reasons why you would. So for example, if I'm looking at a, let's call a balloon payment at 150,000 rand, right? Which could easily be 25 to 30%, depending on the value of a vehicle. Maybe 30% on a 450,000 rand vehicle is 150,000 rand, right? So if you're buying a 450,000 rand vehicle and they say the balloon at 30% is 150, right? Let's say you finance that over 6 years. What's 6 years? 72 months? 72 months means that if you take the balloon, at the end of the 72 months, you now have to pay 150,000 Rand or roll 150,000 Rand into a new car and all of that. It also means if you put 2,100 Rand into a fixed deposit for 72 months, at the end of 5 years, 6 years, you will have 150,000 Rand to pay off a balloon payment. So if you think about it from that perspective, then that means at that point, you have more flexibility in your decision. Your decision can either be to put that money towards the balloon and settle it and keep your vehicle and have it paid up. Or, mind you, that money would have been earning interest in that time. So you'll have some more. Or you can use that money into another kind of investment. So in the 6 years, you would have lowered your installment if it lowers it significantly. Because that's the other thing, right? When you're looking at a balloon.
The thing with the balloon is you're paying, what it means is you're paying interest.
Less.
You pay interest, just not capital.
Yes.
So you do pay less.
So you pay less in the 6 years that you're financing the vehicle. Mm-hmm. And the principal that is deferred. So you take a 450,000 Rand loan. You defer 30% of that to year six, which means you are not paying interest on that. So you pay the interest on the whole balance rather, right? So you're paying it on the full 450, but your installment is calculated effectively on the 300, which can reduce the monthly installment that you're paying. For
so this actually pushes it up. So
it pushes up.
So 250k, 6 years, 30% balloon. You end up paying 393, because remember you're not paying any capital back at any point.
Okay.
Whereas if you got zero balloon, you're actually paying back 368. Now your payments are 5,100.
So what's the difference between
the difference in payments is 700 bucks.
Is 700 rand? Okay, on a 200,000 rand vehicle.
250.
Okay. So I did this with the first vehicle, and perhaps the math doesn't add up anymore, but I did this with the first vehicle that I had. I had the option to, it was a Renault Sandero. I had the option to take it without balloon. It would have had my installment, if I remember correctly, around 1,000 Rand or 1,200 Rand more than what my installment was at the time. Perhaps because it was a first time buy, interest rates were high, those sorts of things. And I calculated that if I had to do what I've just outlined in terms of a balloon payment and a balloon savings method, I ended up needing to only put down 750 Rand into the fixed deposit over that period of time to achieve the balloon that I needed at the end of year five, right? So I could have incurred 1,250 Rand more per month to pay it off without a balloon, or I could have paid it off at the installment that they had worked out with the balloon. And at the end, I would have just had to take that transfer and transfer it back. So effectively, in my head, it worked out, what, 500 Rand cheaper to take the balloon. Now, perhaps I missed something. Was something different in...
This is a lot of math and everything, but why not just buy a Renault Kwid instead? Cheaper car.
Because it might only have one airbag?
Does it have airbags?
You see.
It also has biscuits.
Right. For tires. So if you're going on the highway, this is nothing against Renault Kwid drivers, unless you're that Renault Kwid driver who insists on sitting in the "this is crime" lane, and South Africans out there know exactly which lane I'm talking about and which Kwid drivers these are. But from a financing perspective, I looked at my experience and I thought, because one, I didn't intend to have the Renault forever. Right. And when I sat there and I looked at the fact that once it goes out of maintenance plan, I have to then maintain it. And ordering parts from France is not an easy exercise. Well, at least it wasn't when I had the
car. I had a French car once. In the time that I was waiting for parts, my mother-in-law went to visit family in France for 5 weeks, came back, and the parts hadn't yet arrived.
Hopefully the French have changed that. But I looked at that and I said, if you don't intend on owning a vehicle, and you also don't intend on, or you intend on changing it quite regularly, then reducing the installment as much as possible in that 5 or 6 year period is logical, provided that, and this is the proviso, that the money that you're saving on that installment, you do something with. So you either put it into a fixed deposit, you generate some form of income with it or whatever, you grow that so that it offsets against the time value that you would be losing by having nothing to do there. Right now, if your situation allows, of course, effectively, you'd just still be paying that higher installment, but you'd be doing something more productive with the funds instead of having them sit in one fixed type of asset.
Your logic's not wrong, and there's T's and C's. So now I'm still staying with 250K vehicle. I don't know if you can get one for that much.
I think that might be a Kia Picanto in this day and age.
Okay.
I'll check for you.
And I'm doing a 48-month period, which is only 4 years.
Okay, but so that's an accelerated.
And then let me do a 44% balloon. So you save 86,000 on your payments, but your balloon's 110. With interest, you're probably matching it off.
Right. But in that time, you could have less financial pressure because you don't have to meet higher monthly obligations. Therefore, you might not dip into a credit card or those sorts of things.
Because you're supposed to be saving.
Right. But again, this is the proviso, is that you're doing something else that is equally productive with that saving, and not just saying, I'm saving money. In the meantime, I'm going to go drink. Mm. And 5 years down the line, you haven't really solved problem.
There's also I think Audi does Germany, where they give you a guaranteed balloon T's and C's, guaranteed rebuy.
Yes, T's guaranteed future value and those sorts of things.
Even know the lingo.
Of interest, your 250,000 Rand, a Kia Picanto, including VAT, starts at 240,000.
There we go.
So you can get a whole
Kia Picanto. I don't know
Kia
what a Kia Picanto is. Is it a pretty car? Does it have airbags?
Here it is. Here's a picture of the Picanto, straight from Kia's website. It's not the biggest of vehicles.
It's actually a pretty little car. Do you think it has airbags?
Mm. So speaking of the guaranteed future value thing, leases, right? Mm. I remember a time where certain professions were given lease options over the rest of us normal South Africans, where you were able to then, they take the car, you pay a fixed premium over a fixed period of time. At the end of the 3 years, at the end of the 5 years, you bring that car back to the dealership. They automatically give you a new vehicle to keep going with, and you carry on with that kind of lease agreement. Now, two things on that one. One, you never own the vehicle. It is leased, as the word lease suggests.
Yeah.
The second thing is you are restricted in kilometers, because a lot of them say guaranteed future value based on this amount of mileage, right? So it basically then puts a restriction on how much driving you're then effectively able to do. Now, if already you are in Simon's situation where you are not concerned around doing excessive mileage, then a lease option might be an option for you. That might be something you can look at and say, hang on, I can pay that. And every 3 years, I get a new model. Every 3 years, I get a new car. Every five years, I get a new car.
So the Kia also has two airbags.
Let's check Renault. Let's not underestimate the Renault people.
I want to see what its tires are. They're not telling me what
they should be. I stand corrected. Possibly 13 or 14 inch tires.
14.
Oh, look at that. I wasn't too far off.
Yeah. Okay. You know more about cars than I ever would. Here's the thing. Your more expensive car that you're ballooning, your insurance cost is higher.
Yes.
Your maintenance cost is higher.
Yes.
All of those costs are higher too.
And the Renault Kwid comes with two airbags, but we digress. A whole two. Okay.
I don't know where they fit them, but hey.
Let's look at that. Does it now depend on the size of the vehicle? Because the bigger the vehicle or the brand of the vehicle, the more expensive the cost, the more expensive these balloons and these sorts of things work out to be. If you're getting a starter pack car, then does that affect your consideration? And I call it a starter pack because really very few people I've seen stick with the same Kia Picanto or the same Renault Kwid for 15, 20 years by choice if they have the option to upgrade or to change vehicles, right? Nothing wrong with the vehicles, again. But does it affect how you then deal with the financing, depending on the size of car you want? And this is another consideration. If you're getting a bigger vehicle, could that make more sense to keep that vehicle longer term for the increase that you're paying? So for example, if you're going to pay 3,000 Rand for a Renault Kwid versus paying 4,000 Rand for a BMW 1 Series, which is very unrealistic because they start at 700,000. But this is for simplicity's sake. This is an example. If that's your marginal difference, then in your head, you're likely to keep the BMW longer and therefore beyond the 5-year mark, 10-year mark or whatever. So then does that justify you then saying, maybe let me get the bigger one because yes, I can balloon it and all those things, but I can hold on to it longer?
Yeah, no. To me, it's simple. I mean, a car's a utility. I'm not a petrolhead. I mean, weirdly, I drive a roadster coupe. But I'm not a petrolhead.
The definition of a petrolhead in the 90s.
the only thing, it was mispriced. It was far too cheap. And my question when I went to the dealership was, do I fit? And I fit by like...
that much.
Yeah, I go over a bump. Anyway. We must buy down on cars. I mean, people are far too... they spend far too much. A car is a utility. It gets you from A to B. It needs to be comfortable, it needs to be safe, it needs to be economical, and that's about it. All the pretty and stuff and stuff and stuff, like, no. Like we spend far too much on cars.
So this is the interesting thing. We've got new models, not of cars, but yes, new models of cars, but new models of financing vehicles now, right? So we've looked at the lease model.
Yeah, yeah.
We've looked at the ballooning and the bank financing with a balloon, without a balloon, all of that sort of stuff, and the interest rate you'd get there. We've also looked at the model you went, is just buying the vehicle cash.
Yeah.
You incur the hit once off, it's done, you don't have to worry about it, those sorts of things. Very few people have the ability to kind of put down 200, 300, 400,000 in cash.
Sure, sure.
There are other models as well, though, that I want to look at, Si, is there's a model that looks like it's increasing in popularity, a rent-to-own model.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. So there's a service provider who then gives you the vehicle, you rent the vehicle from them under certain conditions and all of that, and... The interesting thing about that is a lot of people might not qualify for bank financing, and so you go to a private institution that says, here's a rent-to-own model, you're renting the car from us until a certain point, and then you meet certain conditions or you pay us a certain balance, and then the vehicle is yours, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing with that is, okay, firstly, I don't know if I know enough about that model to be able to see whether or not it is a viable alternative, but for some people it might be the only alternative. In terms of financing a vehicle. In that rent-to-own model, I wonder then that how do you then determine the rates and all those things? Because effectively, it would sound as though your interest rate would then just go to the person that's offering you the service or the person you're renting the vehicle from or the company you're renting.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that they are. I mean, I'm looking at this Avis iLease, they call it. So for Toyota Fortuna, it's 16,000 rand over 60 months. Now, that is everything. At the end of it, you give the car back. But that's your...
No, that's a lease model.
Giving it back would be the lease model.
Yeah.
Et cetera, et cetera. But you're also capped at 1,500 kilometers a month.
Yeah.
Which, to the earlier point, is for most people probably not very much.
Mm.
That just seems like a lot of money for a car. And the same thing, you could get a VW Polo Vivo 1.4i Trendline for half that. I go back to, we just spend, I look at all these SUVs around Johannesburg, and like most of them have never seen mud in their life.
Hmm.
Like, so don't get the SUV, get the cheaper thing.
Get the cheaper thing. No, but the SUV looks better. It looks prettier.
And you can ramp pavements. I got to say, so my wife and I got a small SUV.
Yes.
And ramping pavements is my favorite. Because I do that in my Roadster, man, and I am beached. I mean, there's a bump outside the road here in Bath.
Yes.
Which I got to go over very slow. Otherwise, like,
and sideways.
Yeah, otherwise, I get stuck like a beetle on its back.
Well, to be fair, you're going over the speed bump sideways because you drive a Roadster, not because you lowered the suspension on your vehicle. Now, that's a whole completely different conversation.
Yeah.
Not throwing shade at those GTI drivers that decide to go sideways over speed bumps, but it's just not practical in a pothole country. Same reason it's not practical to drive around in a Lamborghini in a city full of potholes, right? But we do it anyway because we like nice things. Back to the rent-to-own setup.
Mm.
It's similar to... It seems like it's quite similar to a subscription model, right? So I'm kind of reading over it while we're having this conversation to get a bit of an understanding from different providers around how it works, right? So at the end of a particular term, that vehicle then becomes yours. So in that term, call it 5 years, call it 6 years, whatever the rental agreement term is, you then take ownership of the vehicle. The assumption there, of course, is that by the end of that vehicle, the person that's provided you with this agreement will have covered whatever costs they need to have covered for themselves, made a tidy profit, and still given you a vehicle that you may not have otherwise been able to traditionally finance through a bank or another financial institution.
Sure.
Now, the thing with that is, I don't know if you can do that with a new vehicle. Because I don't often see new vehicles being put on a rent-to-own model, right?
Mm.
And perhaps that's another security thing from a maintenance perspective, because if I'm a... vehicle manufacturer and OEM, and I say to you guys, this is the vehicle, I'm giving it to you with a 5-year maintenance plan. In that 5 years, I would have maintained it from day one to day what? End of year five. But if I suddenly say you can have a rent to own model on a new vehicle and I don't kind of have the maintenance and all those things, it kind of affects how the vehicle is cared for and all of those other factors, right? But sorry, a rent to own slash subscription kind of model is another way to finance the vehicle. But you still come back to saying that do it cash, do it once.
Yeah, so again, I'm just, and you know what it is, truthfully, I mean, so you can't start cash initially, but aim to buy your third or fourth car with cash. Shop down in your cars, don't need the fanciest. Frankly, it's an Excel spreadsheet. So first off, determine what your needs are. To your point, how many kilometers are you driving? That's an important component. Maybe you have a big family and you need one of these vans.
You need space. Yes.
Maybe you don't. Maybe you do go to the bush.
Yes.
So determine your proper needs. And by needs are not like I want to look flashy at the robot for the pretty man in the car next to me.
For some people that might be a need.
Yeah, I know. But scratch that off because that's a want, not a need.
Yeah.
And determine what your proper needs are, and then haul out an Excel spreadsheet. So just on the vehicle, the Toyota Fortuna, so it's a 705,000 rand vehicle. If I go and do the same 35% balloon, 60 months, et cetera, it actually comes out the same because the 16,000 from Avis includes service, maintenance, tire provision, insurance, et cetera, et cetera. So although their payment is seemingly at 12,563, it will be 13,200 via Westbank. So the interest rate is obviously a little bit lower.
But what interest rate are you getting?
So Avis doesn't tell you an interest
rate. No. I mean from Westbank. Are you getting prime?
You're getting a 13. I'm just Westbank defaulted. Interest is prime plus one, so 12.75 from Avis. So, I mean, ultimately, there is a slight because Westbank has a 69 rand fee just because they can every month because the National Credit Act allows them to, they do. And then probably some on-road fees. So at the end of the day, it seems to actually be much of a muchness at the end of 5 years, except that the Avis iLease is capping you at 1,500 kilometers.
Yeah.
So if you're the bigger driver and you're, you know, I don't know, living in Pretoria and working in Alberton, then this iLease doesn't work for you. So it is just then.
Or if you're a sales rep and you need to be on the road quite often, then it doesn't work for you. So from a job description and from a needs basis, that's the one side of it. Can we see the option without a balloon and see how much it affects the installment by?
Not from Westbank, we can't. Westbank, okay.
Not from the Avis iLease, but perhaps from a Westbank perspective where you set the balloon to zero.
Set the balloon to zero, 16,000. And if we drop the interest rate to
it's 12,000 with a balloon.
13 with a balloon.
13 with a balloon, 16 without a balloon. So there's a 3,000 rand difference there. Okay, over the same period. Okay.
Yeah, and your balloon at 35% is 250K, call it.
250K?
Yeah.
250K over how many years?
Five.
Over 5 years. Mm. Okay, and if you were to then do 3,000 over 5 years as well, so put that 3,000 somewhere else over 5 years, over 60 months, that's 180,000.
So you're slightly behind.
Yeah. So again,
I mean, you've earned some interest.
Yeah, so you would have earned interest from that perspective. And again, you might have other considerations that you could use the funds for at the end of the period, what you do, what
you
don't
do. The car, absolutely. I mean, you've got your, Because and so that's what I did. So I bought my first car. It was a 4-year payment plan and I kept the car for 9 years. So at the end of 4 years, I don't stop paying. I just put the money somewhere else. And then I come, and then of course we raid it, we go on some holidays. But when I come to buy my second car, I've now got a much, my first deposit was 10%, my second deposit was 30%.
That's something we didn't look at, Simon.
And then again, my payment ends after, in fact, I switched, I had a French car, I had to change it.
That's something we didn't look at, is the deposit component. Do I put down a deposit when I put get the vehicle? Do I finance it without the deposit? Because there's many theories now. Yeah. And one of the good theories that I've seen as well is don't put down the deposit if you can avoid it. Let them finance you at whatever rate they finance you at and all of that. Now, deposits can potentially reduce your interest rate. Mm-hmm. And I saw that with one of the vehicles that I purchased, mm-hmm. that putting down a deposit lowers how the bank sees your risk profile from that perspective. But also, if they're able to finance you at a good rate without a deposit, then when you then have that deposit money, instead of putting it towards the deposit, put it down as a principal payment on the debt after you finance the vehicle.
And the thing with deposit, so if you're doing a 12.75% cost of loan on the vehicle, your idea to put it as a principal, yes. But if you're saying I'm going to go and invest it somewhere else, you need to be beating 12.75%. After costs.
That's it. So that's where it comes. That's where we go back to the point that we made around the fact that the alternative utilization of those funds becomes that much more important. You have to beat whatever rate you would then be getting for leaving the money there at the bank. So if, for example, the bank was going to say we would finance you at 9% and you know that you can get 13% in a money market account, then you're well worth, instead of taking the balloon and putting it into the car, putting it into a money market account. It'll grow faster. And we haven't yet looked at the fact that if it's from kind of a fixed deposit into even if you have it in something that automatically reinvests year on year, you now have the benefit of 5 years of compounding from an interest perspective as well. Yeah. The same way the bank has the compounding effect on what they are billing you, you get to benefit from the compounding perspective there. So I still stand by the fact that a balloon is not the worst idea, provided the provisos are there, provided that the funds that would have gone towards that higher installment are being used productively and actively to generate a better return than what they would be if they were sitting on that side.
Yeah.
Sai still stands by his point, which is buy it in?
Buy down.
Oh, I thought you were going to say buy it in cash.
Well, eventually. You're not going to buy your first one in cash.
Yeah, you're not going to buy your first one in cash.
But eventually.
Buy down, which is another thing. And perhaps let's wrap up the conversation on the buy down point there. I've noticed that, one, the vehicle manufacturers have made their cars increasingly more expensive.
Yo.
And so I've resigned myself to the point of saying, I don't think I will ever buy another vehicle brand new. Now, I say that because there are plenty of good vehicles, good value vehicles, secondhand vehicles, reliable vehicles, and all of that. The secondhand market has grown to the extent that that is now a viable alternative to buying a vehicle new. And there's that age-old saying of when you drive a vehicle off a dealership lot, it loses 20% of its value the moment the tires hit the tar, which is another theory. But for me, it just seems quite cumbersome and inefficient if you're going to be paying the rates that you're paying, right? So let's look at a family vehicle before we go, right? Let's look at a BMW X3 or X5. Call it an X3.
So you come from different family from me, but hey, carry on.
I use that because I want to look at the new X3, right? The new X3 2-liter drive on BMW's website goes from 16,600 rand a month for an X3 2-liter D, right? 16,300. So call it 16,500.
What does the D stand for?
Diesel. Call it 16.5. You do the math on 16.5 from your perspective. I'm going to pull up the same, not the same vehicle, obviously, because it's aged, right? The same aged X3 on AutoTrader, one of the reliable platforms that you can go and find a vehicle for, shop around for a vehicle for there, right? There is the first one that comes up here that I'm looking at, I'm not even looking at it seriously. There's a 2019 version, so this car's about 6 years old, retailing at about 500,000 rand. 16.5 over 60 months, right? Let's do the math on that. 16.5 over 60 months means you end up paying 990,000 rand, a million. Call it a bar, right? You can get a vehicle that's 5 years older at half a bar. half the price. Mm-hmm. Now, 5 years, yes, it's 5 years old. You'd have to do some maintenance, all those things and all of those other...
And these cars last, I mean...
They do, yeah. Depending on which vehicle that you get, right? And sure, also, sure. The one that I'm looking at is not even the same one. It's a 30D, so it might be a slightly different engine or whatever. But let's find... I found a 20D, right? A 2-liter D from 2010. So this car is now 15 years old.
Ooh, too old.
15 years old. Versus brand new.
So if you're buying secondhand, my view, so my Roadster was an exception that it sat some guy, you could tell that he had bought it on his 65th birthday because you can see the previous owner's details and that in the 6 years he owned it, he had done 8,000 kilometers. He had this.
So he hadn't driven it.
Yeah, he was going to have a retirement life and he never quite got to it.
Yeah.
What I'm targeting, so my wife just bought her car. It was 3 years old, 25,000 kilometers, and it was a third below sticker price for a new one. And that's what you want. You don't want to go 15 years old. You don't even want to go 6 years old. You want to go a year or three old and you want low mileage.
But if you do go 5 to 10 years old, here's the benefit that you get. The new vehicle, we worked out to, 16 and a half a month.
Mm-hmm.
This vehicle, being 15 years old with 150,000 Ks on it, is 160,000 Rand. That you could probably save up for and buy entirely in cash.
And so,
so yes, you'd be getting a 15-year-old vehicle, but you wouldn't be paying the bank on a monthly basis.
It's not a lot of mileage.
150,000 Ks is not, especially in a diesel engine. They run
It's less than 1,000 Ks a month.
Yes, they run like workhorses. Mm. Now, that's again another consideration that you have to look into around whether I get a new vehicle, how old the vehicle is, what budgets I've got, all sorts of other things. But I think that is enough from our side from a consideration perspective. We'd love to hear your sides and your experiences. We've gone through experiences from a new vehicle perspective, from a cash vehicle perspective, from a lease vehicle perspective. We'd love to hear your experiences, your thoughts, and how you've seen the car financing world and what journeys you've gone through. So please drop us comments, drop us suggestions. Drop us messages as well. We'll take a look at those and see what we can make of them. But we're going to leave the deep dive on that note. And we wrap things up with Investor Insights. We are taking a look at some allegations made by one of the JSE-listed companies against the JSE. And we're also going to be updating our wall. We've got an interesting stock that we might want to throw onto the wall or not in Boeing. We're going to look at that. And then we've got, of course, as we always do now, our unfiltered opinion of the week. Let's start with the mining company that is Mantengu. They came out and said that they were not happy with some things. They wanted the JSE to be investigated for their share price and all of those sorts of things and manipulation or whatever it was from their perspective. And the FSCA said that, well, they had conducted an investigation. They found no improprieties. They found nothing wrong. Then the company came back and said, well, the FSCA didn't investigate everything.
Yeah. So, and to their point, so the FSCA was doing stuff up until about mid last year. I actually read the FSA thing and then I completely forgot. So that's up to around mid last year. Mm. There is allegations that they've had this year as well. And in fact, as recent as April, maybe it was, in fact, it was early May. Mm. It was 9 May.
9 May is this month.
Yeah, yeah. And so there was 8 May was the 1.8 million shares at Standard Bank. And then 9 May they sent letters and stuff and NPAs and everything else. And they are alleging stuff. So the argument is that, yes, the FSCA investigated their first sets of claims, but that's like last year. What about this year? Mm. And that's a fair comment, except that I would argue that you basically said this stuff was happening and the FSCA said no, and now you've come back and said other stuff is happening. Do you have better evidence? Now, there is that phone call that came from Standard Online Share Trading to a client needed to borrow 1.8 billion shares so that they wouldn't, otherwise there would be a misdeal. The allegation of shorting, I mean, I have no insight here. The allegation is around naked shorting because shorting is not illegal.
So what's naked shorting?
So with a short, I borrow shares from Jimmy, I sell them into the market with the plan that I buy them back at a lower price and I return them to Jimmy with a cup of coffee as interest.
Lovely.
Now that coffee's probably
short selling, very common, happens. Legit.
Naked is why I don't bother phoning Jimmy. I just sell shares I don't own. Now that's very difficult to do on the JSE because whereas most exchanges around the world, the sort of the client level details of holdings are held at broker level.
Yes.
The JSC, it's held central. JSC holds that information. And this, I know, because I work for a stockbroker. Naked shorting is not easy, but it's also not impossible. I mean, it is certainly possible to do. It's not easy. They've come, so Mtengu came and said, no, and now they're saying, but they looked at stuff from last year. What about stuff this year? I look at this chart, and to be clear, I'm just looking at a chart. I have no deep insight.
That's it. Not financial advice, folks.
No. I just see a share where there is somebody who wants to get the heck out of Dodge. You can see that there is, at the moment, there is a seller at 60 cents who has been in the market since early March. Before that, they were at 70 cents. Before that, they were at 80 cents. Before that, they were at 90 cents. Before that, they were, you get the picture. So what's basically happening here is somebody, it looks like on the chart, wants out, and they're desperately doing it. We saw this in purple. Well, they're fussy with price. The problem is here, it's a low liquid stock. There's only 500,000 shares in the buy side. And that would, mind you, that spreads better. It's 54 to 50s to buy top five.
Yeah.
And that's almost 500,000 shares. But depending who they are, and as I know very little about this business, one of the previous execs has left and started a competitor and might have a lot of shares they no longer want to hold.
That's a very real possibility. And so
maybe someone bought a whole lot of shares at what's the high here? Like a whole bigger price and no longer wants to hold. Patently,
maybe the friend of the executive who's left has done
There is somebody who wants out of this share.
Yes.
And maybe it's somebody's. Naked shorting. Okay. And to be clear, there was also a buyer at one point at 77-ish cents. Someone who was very keen to buy at 77 and then worked out that actually
I
can get it cheaper.
Yeah.
So there's a seller here. There's a seller in the market. Now, I get Mtengu's problem. They want to do some deals. They want to do their script. Not at 60 cents, not at 50 cents a share. They need a better share price. That's unfortunate. But I see no evidence of share price manipulation. And sometimes, to be clear, you can look at a share price and think, yo, someone is scamming this. For somebody to be shorting a stock like this, man, you are a brave person.
Yeah, to be shorting it at that point.
Naked short or not, like a low liquid stock like this, man.
Unless, as you said, I was given share options, they vested, I have those shares with me, but I've left the company and I no longer want to hold those shares. Unfortunately, the company cannot dictate to me when and how I need to dispose of those shares. So if I'm comfortable taking 50, 60 cents on that share as opposed to the 70 or 80 cents, then that should be my discretion as, you know, a shareholder of that share. Yeah. We'll never know, but we are going to move on to another thing with shares, and that is our stock pick. We're going to be looking at our pick for our wall, and we are looking at Boeing.
So here's my weird thing, which I didn't know. The Boeing share code's BA. Wouldn't BA's share code be BA? Okay, BA is not listed because it's owned by the Queen, but you get my point.
Fair, but still, I mean, if you're looking in the US, BA would jump to be Bank of America, wouldn't it?
No. That's BOF. So BA is actually BAE Systems in the UK.
Oh.
And Asia, it's Bangkok Airways Public. Okay. So back to your point.
To the point around the Boeing share price.
You test me with these, Jimmy. You test me, man. You test me.
That's the fun part. That's why we do this. This is why. So we can figure out what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. Like $400 million Boeing plane being donated.
So let's get that part out of it. Right now, the erstwhile orange one is out there being a salesman for Boeing. When he did a deal with Starmer in the UK, part of the deal was they were going to buy 10 Boeings or something. I'm not sure who, not the government, but someone in the UK was going to buy 10 of them.
This is interestingly enough after China just refused to take delivery of Boeings they had previously bought.
There's a lot sitting in a parking lot somewhere, but we'll come back to that because they're not. And then when he came back from Qatar from his Middle East trip, someone was going to buy 100 Boeings.
Yeah, there was a commitment and all of that.
Et cetera, et cetera. Commitments are lovely. China did say, actually, looky, they're Airbus. Also, China has their own brand of airplanes. We must actually look into that Brazilian one time. That's quite an interesting one as well.
Not one-time airlines that used to exist in
South America. That's a different one-time. But okay, so there's that it's quite useful that Trump is out there being your salesperson. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's Trump, right? On Friday, he put 50% tariffs on Europe, and yesterday he took them off, yesterday being Sunday.
Yes.
So, like, are these inked deals, or is this just over a cup of chai? Because Trump doesn't drink.
It's so complicated.
Imagine if he drank. Imagine a drunk Trump. Whoa. Anyway. The man doesn't drink. Good for him.
Well, for now.
But then there's the problem. When they did the deal with McDonald, they bought out McDonald something, aviation, etc. And Boeing used to be an engineer-led company, which you need to be in this space. And then they bought McDonald and they whatever it was, and they let the accountants run the show. Mm-hmm. And that's how we got the 787 MAX disaster, which I want to be too clear, very clear. Two airplanes fell out of the sky, and the initial response from Boeing was – and we had to read between the lines. The response from Boeing...
You said just fell out of the sky.
Well, pretty much, yes, because the thingies went the wrong way and the planes dived into the ground.
Okay.
And the response from Boeing was broadly, yeah, but these are brown people. And they said, like, what's the training? What's the standards? Because it was Ethiopia and Lion, right?
Ah, okay.
And they were like, oh, no, but
it's not. It's not the plane's fault.
No, these are training and all of. And I remember at the time, like, guys, there are dead people.
Yes.
Like this is like, you and dude, like, for Voot, like, freaking his ears picked up. Anyway. So that raised some heckles on my back. But it's quite clear, and having listened to a bunch of podcasts and done a lot of digging into Boeing a while ago, because surely there's value. There's only two plane manufacturers in the world. Turns out there's more. But anyway, they've got a culture problem. And their culture problem is really, really simple in that they let the bean counters take over. And now what's happened? They haven't built a wide-body plane from scratch in 20 years. They don't know how to.
Oh.
They don't know how to.
Okay. So does that then mean... we put Boeing on the list and we've got a slot for this on the list for alternatives to Boeing.
Ah.
And in that space, I suppose alternatives would then be Airbus as a prime example there, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I've also got another theory that I want to posture from an alternative standpoint.
Embraer, E-M-B-R-A-E-R.
Mm-hmm.
They are Brazilian and they make planes.
Okay.
I don't know if they're listed.
I'm going to go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And say this is not directly aviation linked.
Oh, this is going to be fun. Oh, Embraer is listed in New York.
Okay.
Carry on.
They're not directly aviation linked.
I like when Jimmy goes down weird roads.
But hear me out.
Hearing.
Instead of going into the aviation company that's going to take you forever from how long it takes to make a Boeing, how many orders you can fulfill in a month, whether there's a shortage in terms of supply and parts and that.
Mm-hmm.
Why not invest in the engines that go into Boeing in Rolls Royce?
And then on the side, you could get a little fancy car, which, see previous point, don't. But Rolls Royce.
Rolls Royce as an alternative to Boeing.
And their code is RR.
And it's a simple ticker code, right?
And they go into...
And they make cars.
Into Boeings. They make cars.
They go into Airbuses as well.
And rockets.
So they supply both.
And all sorts of things.
Right.
Let's buy some Rolls Royce.
Cool. So Boeing is going in our alternative because Rolls Royce is going where we like it.
Mm.
Now, whether or not we like Rolls Royce enough is the other question. Do we like it enough to have it sit near blue chip status, or even in blue chip.
I think so. There's one that drives around Rosebank sometimes, man. And I mean,
they're very pretty things.
See,
those
previous
things.
Previous point, not petrol head. maybe I'm a secret closet petrol head. Anyway, the point being is in terms of Boeing and Airbus, there's demand. Is it increasing?
Yes.
I think that we'll probably
it's moderating.
See,
looking at the Boeing share price.
But I got to say, in terms of these Rolls Royce engines, don't some of them go into like military planes and stuff as well? And now we're talking.
So
because there's a lot of those needed.
Right. Quick one on the Boeing share price. It hasn't really done much. It's kind of been stagnant. You can kind of look at a chart and you see a lot of wicks to the upside, wicks to the downside. If the results are good, it's a moderate share price. It's nothing exciting there. And that's the other reason why I don't really think it needs to make our
war. Rolls Royce is...
Bottom left to top right. There we go. And on the Rolls Royce side of it, the other thing is... diversity, right? So you're not, you supply all of the guys, you're not really bothered. The engines kind of make the money, but you also sell a Rolls Royce at a ridiculous price. But.
And wait for Trump. You might get a better price because when Trump spoke on Liberation Day, they dropped below £6 and now they're at £8.25.
A word to Rolls Royce, the company.
Mm.
This is from us at Insider.
Mm.
please.
I know what he's saying.
Please do not make an electric vehicle. You have the Rolls-Royce Spectre. Nobody likes it. You have the ability to make a V12 engine that can balance a coin on it because it's so sophisticated. That engine is so quiet.
But
so
it flies
still.
Aeroplanes.
You fly aeroplanes. Why are you making an electric vehicle? Okay. Leave it alone.
Okay, no, ignore him. Rolls-Royce, Jimmy, love him. He's wrong. Send us a car.
Oh, yes, that. We will happily test drive a boat tail, a wraith, a ghost. We can name all of them. But that is all we have time for. That is the show. Shout out to Rolls-Royce if you guys are watching this.
We would love you.
Yes, love you. Bye. Before we go, we're going to leave you with an unfiltered opinion. And the unfiltered opinion of the week this week is something special. I'm going to say something, Sime, because this is a view I hold dear to my heart. And I want to get your thoughts on, one, my unfiltered opinion, but also your experiences with this particular thing. Bacon should be crispy, no matter what the circumstance. That is my unfiltered opinion. Never be anything other than absolutely crispy and as crispy as it could be.
Crispy, yes. As crispy as maybe not. I pork sausage over bacon anytime. I can't cook bacon crispy or otherwise. How is someone help me cook bacon?
Okay.
I need a YouTube video.
We're going to get Simon some crispy bacon. That is our unfiltered opinion of the week. And if you don't know by now, investing isn't hard. Just try it. The views expressed by the host or hosts in this show do not necessarily represent those of our clients, sponsors, partners, or guests, and should not be considered investment advice in any way. Similarly, the views and opinions of our guests and clients do not necessarily reflect those of our hosts or our platform. Nothing shared on this platform or any other platform affiliated with us should be read and construed as constituting investment advice of any kind on the part of Insider Exchange, any of its hosts, guests, partners, or sponsors. Trading and investing carry varying levels of risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Please ensure that you fully understand the risks and take appropriate care to manage your risk. We strongly advise that you obtain independent financial, legal, and tax advice from regulated professionals and institutions before proceeding with investment decisions.